I'd like to call our meeting to order, and with that, I'd like to ask Sheriff Daniels, please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, if you'd all stand.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Sheriff.
Thanks, sir.
Morning, Director.
Good morning, sir. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, thank you for being here this morning. We've got a fairly large agenda, so I'll try to keep my comments brief, but it's been a while, so I want to make sure I cover everything to keep you well informed. First matter of business, John Tellier from the Attorney General's Office will be your independent advisor for all of our final action cases.
Good morning, John.
Good morning. And then I'd like to start off again with, if I find Steve Jacobs. Where is Steve Jacobs? Steve, come on up. That is not a work-related injury on his wrist. But Steve is actually the longest tenured member of Arizona Post. He's now been here for 25 years. So I would like to present Steve with his pin from the state in recognition for his service. It gets bigger at 30, I'm told. But again, Steve is a consummate professional. We routinely spar back and forth because sometimes we have difference of opinions. But I really respect his opinion, his insight, and just his historical knowledge of what this board has done historically over the years. So, again, Steve, congratulations on your dedicated service. I'm looking forward to having you for at least a few more years, right?
Well, in January, you'll have had me for 26.
So. All right. Well, here you go. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Steve? No,
we're never going to let that happen.
Hey, Steve.
Sir?
Thank you very much for your service with AzPost. You've done a tremendous job for all those years. It's a difficult job, and I appreciate it very much. I've known you for a long, long time. You're very dedicated, knowledgeable at what you do. It doesn't go unnoticed. So thank you very much for all your service here, and it's very much appreciated, I'm sure, by the whole board. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It's been a very, very good place to work, and hope to continue doing so for at least a couple more years.
Well, thank you for everything.
Thanks, Steve.
Just a couple housekeeping items from the agenda. If you could look under the consent items, Rogelio Bermudez from a training deficiency, we can remove him from the list. He has completed that.
Which one was that?
Rogelio Bermudez.
Okay.
Then going to new cases, we're actually going to reverse your order today. So case number one, Aaron Aldridge, we're going to do that second, and we're going to move Joshua Carroll, case number two, up to number one. We're just reversing the order of one and two there.
Okay.
Then we're on number seven for new cases. We're going to table that item. We need additional investigation, reference some new information. And then if you look at your final action cases, we had some last-minute consent agreements. So final action case number eight, that we'll be asking at that time we get that, we'll be asking for a motion to accept the consent agreement that is in your book. And then item number 10, item number 10, is case 19-145, Dave Moy. That's a denial certification. Again, we have a consent agreement for that. So when we get to that item, we'll be asking for a motion to accept the consent agreement that, again, is provided in your book. And, Mr. Chairman, with that, one more. We had one last minute. Final action case number one, William Murray, 17-135. We were just advised his attorney was in a traffic collision this morning, is still working to get here, but if he's not here when we get to that case, we're going to push that back as far as we need to make sure, allow him time to get here.
Certainly.
And then with that, again, that's the end of my introduction and announcements. Okay. Any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Any questions?
And if not, I'll move into my director's report, if that's okay?
Yes, please.
Okay, just a few things I want to touch on. Last month, I wasn't here for the board meeting. Ben Henry covered me because I was actually traveling on state business. Earlier in October, I went to that ATALIST conference. It's the International Association of Directors of Law Enforcement Training and Standards and Training in Boise, Idaho, an opportunity to sit down with my peer in all of the western states and share ideas. Got a lot of really good ideas and learned that we're not unique. We're all suffering from the same issues of retention and hiring and working with standards in the hiring practice. So it was again a really good opportunity to exchange ideas with my peers from around the western states and to understand that we're not alone in this. So we talk quite regularly now, and opening those lines of communication to me has been very important. I also got to spend a week with Cal Post in San Diego for a de-escalation conference. It was really well attended. I was very thankful for the invitation that they offered. And it had a lot of really good breakout sessions and brainstorming ideas on how we can institute, whether it's de-escalation policies in policing or de-escalation training or the combination of the two. First quarter of 2020, they'll be publishing a report from our collective responses and our collective feedback. And I'll be looking forward to sharing that with the board coming after the first quarter of 2020. Couple other things I want to talk about. SRO training, I know you might have all seen in the news, but Governor Ducey and Representative Hernandez from Tucson got together earlier this year when there was some information in the budget referenced SRO training and SRO funding, and Representative Hernandez had some concerns about SROs and how well trained they are. So they brought Arizona Post into the mix. I met with the group, and we came up with providing additional training. Governor Ducey in his budget for fiscal year 19-20 gave us additional funding. And beginning this week, we hosted a class at the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office Training Center. We had just shy of 60 SROs there. Today, I just went out this morning and kicked off the one at the Mesa Training Facility, and we have about 45 to 50 in that class. Our hope is that we'll do one in Tucson or down south in the spring and one up north in the spring as well to make sure we cover SROs statewide. And then we can continue to add classes if the need arises. It's been very well received. It's adolescent mental health training for SROs. It's 12 hours. A lot of it comes with crisis communication, crisis intervention, de-escalation, understanding the adolescent brain, as well as the SRO's responsibility on a school campus. Again, I went out yesterday and talked to some of the participants who had been there for Monday because it's a day and a half, and they said the Monday class was excellent. They really felt like they got something out of it. So, again, I think we're just moving in the right direction, and it was really good for me to see that bipartisan, they are able to get together and work on a common issue and come up with a successful solution. So, again, just want to give you an update that we're a part of that, and it's something I'm very proud of. Yesterday, we talked before about rulemaking changes in 2020, probably going to happen in 2020. As part of that, you're aware, and I think Ben talked about it last month, we sent out a survey to all agency heads. And we met with ASU yesterday and got an update. We haven't closed the survey. I'm going to send out one final push to see if I get a little bit more participation. As of yesterday, we had about 100 responses from the chiefs and sheriffs, again, from 159 emails that I sent out. So I'm hoping to get a little bit better. If I send out one more reminder, we're going to close it on December 1st. But it was interesting to see they gave us some of the feedback yesterday. Again, it's anonymous, so we don't know who's giving us information. But it was really interesting to see. We're starting to see some trends and some ideas of what the chiefs and sheriffs want to see throughout the state regarding rule changes to Arizona Post guidelines. On a tangent there, they also did a different survey to students of the criminology program at ASU. They've also asked U of A and NAU to do the same thing, but we were able to look at some of the results. As of yesterday, they had more than 700 entered, and they've got about another 400 that are waiting to be entered from the students. Those are criminology students. Those are the people who are going to hopefully come into this profession in the future. And it's interesting to see what their perspectives are on pre-employment, especially pre-employment drug use, and what the sheriffs and chiefs are saying. And we just need to make sure, I think, we can get those two groups together. It's how we can become successful hiring people and making rule changes that are applicable to all the agencies across the state. Couple other things. In January, we're going to do a slight reorganization here. As you know now, we have three different sections. We have compliance, we have in-service training, we have basic training. First of the year, we're going to streamline. We're going to go from compliance and then just create one training section. And we're going to move people around. Marie Dreyer is going to move over to compliance, and Kip Rustenberg is going to handle all training from Arizona Post perspective. We're going to move some other people around internally to make that more effective. We're really looking to make some changes in our efficiencies, and I think this is one way to do it by streamlining that process. Technology upgrade, just as we've talked about it before, but we're upgrading all of our technology. Dan Wilson, our chief technology officer, has made some recommendations. We're working very closely with the state's ADOA. We're moving all of our servers here to the cloud just to, again, to be more effective, to have it more secure. Again, I can give you more updates as we progress through that through 2020. Facility upgrades, as we know, we had Acta come in and do a threat assessment for the building. I won't go into specific details of what we're doing, but we are in the process of making updates to the building based on the recommendations that they provided to us. And again, I can provide more information at a later date as those come to fruition. Board members, we're still down two board members, and I'm glad to see we're all here today, but we're still down two. We're down a public member, and we're down a jail commander member. I am told through the governor's office of boards and commissions that our final two people are going through the final background process now, and I hope to have them appointed and sitting here hopefully by next month, if not the first meeting in January. And then video presentations. Today you're going to see two cases. We're going to show you videos. We haven't traditionally done that in the past. We've always had them available for your viewing, but we haven't just shown them. Today we're going to show those to you because no matter how good we are at compiling facts and telling a story, a picture's worth 1,000 words. And I think these two videos, it's very important that we show those to you and give you a better understanding of what occurred, because I just don't think we would do either one of those cases justice without showing you the actual video. And then the last thing I want to, just one more thing, and Chairman, I forgot to mention this in my announcements. We are moving on your new cases, item number, number 11, Jillian Bradshaw. We are going to move that down after, which is currently titled number 15, Allison Broughton. We're going to move it to the end. And the reason being is we're going to move into executive session for that case. So we just thought just for efficiency, we would move that to the end.
Okay, thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the board might have.
Questions, comments? All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, sir.
We're going to move on next to the consent agenda. I think we've all had a chance to review that. And any questions or comments on the consent? If not, may I ask for a motion to approve our consent agenda?
Frank Melstead, motion to approve consent agenda.
Alan Rodwell, second.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion on that agenda? Having none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And the motion carries. With that, we are going to move down to the next agenda item, Pima Community College Department. Petition for applicant Thomas Crone. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Mark Brachtel on behalf of the State of Arizona, Arizona Post. In front of you is a petition submitted by the Pima Community College Police Department on behalf of applicant Thomas Crone. The college is submitting this petition under the correct administrative rule, Rule 105C. And in summary, during Mr. Cron's hiring process, he disclosed that he had consumed 25 or fewer uses of marijuana, he passed his polygraph with that estimate. Because his estimate exceeds 20 uses, his estimate of marijuana is not presumed to be for experimentation. As such, Pima College has submitted its petition. It is citing to the correct administrative authority, and it is asking for a waiver of a minimum qualification. And I believe that there is a representative here from the college who would like to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Bradford. Morning, sir.
Good morning. I'm Captain Harold Janes with the Pima County Sheriff's Department. I'm on loan as the acting chief for Pima Community College. The reason we requested this waiver is that we believe the conduct was not so egregious that public trust in law enforcement profession would be jeopardized if he received certification. And the candidate is currently certified as a peace officer in the state of Colorado, and he left in good standing with no open investigations or any disciplinary actions. So, in closing, Pima Community College Police Department believes candidate Cron would be a good candidate for the position of police officer believe his maximum 25-time marijuana use constitutes experimentation according to Arizona Post rules. So we request that petition.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
Mr. Chairman, I have a couple questions.
Yes.
Captain, when was the last use, and was the use during his time as a peace officer in Colorado?
His last use was in 2008 when he was 21 years of age. He became a police officer in 2012. So it was not during his time as a police officer, and it was at the age of 21.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Having none, may I have a motion, please?
Mr. Chairman, Chris Pittman.
Yes.
I move that we grant the waiver.
I have a motion.
As outlined in agenda item E.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Ed Medina, I'll second that.
I have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion on that? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And the motion carries unanimously. Thank you. All right, we're going to move on to final action cases. Mr. Breck.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first case will be case number 15054 involving Officer William Caldwell. I'm sorry, Officer Jim Salazar.
did we meet one?
Yes, never meet.
Sorry. Thank you, sir. Go right ahead.
Thank you. Post received this case in 2015. The board initiated on the case in 2017, and a hearing was held in front of OLA in August of 2019. I conducted the hearing on behalf of Post. Post alleged that Officer Salazar was dishonest after he was served with a notice of investigation, after he received his Garrity, and during the professional standards interview. Specifically, Officer Salazar claimed that as part of his investigation, he ran a criminal history on a suspect in a domestic violence case, when in fact he had not. The state established at the hearing that he did not run a criminal history, that in fact his patrol sergeant had on his behalf. The administrative law judge in paragraph number 26 of her decision and order concluded that she did not find Officer Salazar's testimony to be credible. And the administrative law judge in her decision sustained allegations A8, which was in effect in 2016, misfeasance, malfeasance, and A9, conduct which disrupts or diminishes the public trust. The post recommends that the board accept the ALJ's findings of fact and conclusions of law, and in similar fact-based circumstances, the board has revoked. There may be counsel present on behalf of Officer Salazar.
Morning, sir.
Excuse me. Good morning, members of the board. My name is David Williams. I'm counsel for Officer Salazar. We appreciate the time you've taken to consider these issues. I will not necessarily take issue with the findings of fact outlined in the ALJ's recommended decision. What I would ask today is that the board would exercise its discretion not to suspend and not to revoke Officer Salazar's certification. Here is sort of where we're at. This was a domestic violence investigation. This is Officer Salazar responded to a call for an alleged domestic violence altercation on January 7th of 2014. The basic underlying things that prompted the investigation by the police department in Eloy was that he had not conducted a thorough investigation. It broke down to he didn't obtain a recorded statement from either the complainant or the alleged suspect. And that was really what precipitated the underlying investigation. In his report, Officer Salazar specifically stated that he checked DM's past history. He doesn't say he ran a criminal history. He doesn't say that he called dispatch and had him run something through NCIC or EGIS. He just said, I ran a past history of DV for the suspect. That's all he stated. And then in the context of the investigation by Lieutenant Jerome with the town of Eloy, there then became allegations that Officer Salazar made a misleading statement or was dishonest in the context of that investigation. But if you think about the broader context, Officer Salazar has been licensed by this board, has had a certification in good standing with this board for over 13 years. He has worked in the town of Eloy. He subsequently resigned from the town of Eloy after the conclusion of this investigation and has been working in other employment agencies since then, primarily as a reserve officer. His career is not something that he would stake a claim on whether he ran a criminal history on someone's domestic violence history, or that in his 13 years, it kind of begs the question of why would he lie to the investigator about something as simple as running a criminal history? It doesn't really make sense. If Officer Salazar really was out to be dishonest and mislead his superiors, he would have just said, he would have either omitted that from his report, or he would have actually made an outright misrepresentation in the report. In his testimony at the hearing, he testified that he went back to the patrol room, and there's an open terminal, and he ran essentially a search through CAD, which my understanding is just simply an open terminal that you can sit down on and just run the call history for the suspect. And that's what was reflected in his report. He called it CAD. I think there's also the term Cisco is the system that he used. Sergeant Barnett, who was his immediate supervisor, went back later and actually made double check to make sure whether a criminal history had been asked through dispatch, which that's how the town of Eloy would normally run a criminal history check. That didn't happen, and that's not what Officer Salazar did. Now, where things get muddied is in the context of the underlying investigation. That's where Post and that's where the town of Eloy had alleged, the police department of the city of Eloy had alleged that Officer Salazar was dishonest. And frankly, I think, again, it begs the question of why would he lie about something as simple as whether he ran a background check on a random call that he investigates hundreds of calls a month and runs in response to hundreds of different matters. Why would he risk his career over something as innocuous as this? There's an additional context to this investigation, which is Lieutenant Jerome, and if you've had the opportunity to read the record, I'm not going to get into the dirty deep details of that. It's in the record in front of the ALJ, and in this setting, I don't think it's appropriate to get into someone else's background. But Officer Salazar had reported Lieutenant Jerome for malfeasance to his superior, and there was an ongoing investigation against Lieutenant Jerome. At the same time, Lieutenant Jerome was conducting this investigation of Officer Salazar. Officer Salazar was understandably fearful that there would be some sort of reprisal or retaliation against him by the person that he had reported up the chain of command. And so it's within the context of that, and Officer Salazar testified at the hearing that he was nervous, that he was trying to recall things. He didn't necessarily have the benefit of his report every time he was questioned. And so therefore, it's easy for one to conclude that someone would make a mistake inadvertently in the context of an investigation where the person that is charged with investigating you is someone you reported up the chain of command. And so within that context, you can draw different inferences as to why Officer Salazar might get it wrong in the context of whether he, quote, ran a criminal history. His testimony has been consistent was that he simply went into the squad room, ran a CAD report, and he ran a background check sitting at an open terminal. He was consistent with that. He never said that he contacted dispatch and asked to run an NCIC report. That was never his testimony. And ultimately, the ALJ saw it differently, and I'm not disputing what the ALJ said. I'm simply trying to provide you additional context that's not in the ALJ opinion, but is in the record that was in front of the Office of Administrative Hearings. Ultimately, the reason I point these out to you is that, at the very least, we acknowledge that Officer Salazar could have done a more thorough investigation by obtaining recorded statements of the two people involved in the underlying call. And he admits that. We stipulated to that at the hearing, and it streamlined the hearing. The sole issue then was whether he was dishonest, and we don't believe, if you look at the full context of this, that he was. Officer Salazar has impeccable integrity. He has always tried to do his job the best he can. And again, why would he risk his career over something as innocuous as not running a criminal background check on a suspect? At the end of the day, this board has the discretion not to suspend or revoke a peace officer certification, and we believe that is what this board should do in this circumstance. Officer Salazar has already been penalized enough. He lost his employment with the town of Eloy. He's been working as a reserve officer in a smaller jurisdiction, and so he's certainly borne the brunt of his punishment, to the extent you want to call that punishment, arising out of these circumstances. I don't think you should end his career by suspending or revoking his certification. He's certainly borne the stripes, for lack of a better description, of this circumstance. And we ask that you would exercise your discretion and not
Thank
revoke
you.
Or suspend.
Any comments, questions?
Ms. Brack, anything else? Ms.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. In paragraph 8 of the administrative law judge's decision, and that's on the last page of her decision, page 12, the judge concludes that based upon the totality of the evidence presented at hearing, Officer Salazar lied to Lieutenant Jerome that he conducted a criminal history report on the suspect of a domestic violence case. And since that is the finding, based upon the history of the board, that a lie post-Garrity during an investigation warrants revocation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions, comments?
Mr. Chair, Paul Ehler, I'm going to recuse myself on this matter.
Yes, sir, I reflect that. Any other comments, questions on this? Having none, may I have a motion, please?
Mark Downs, I make a motion to accept the finding of fact from ALJ and pull the sanction and revocation.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Mr. Chairman, Joe Pagri, I second.
I have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion on that? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Crispin.
Thank you. And the motion carries. We'll be moving on to the next case, 17-104. Mr. Brackman.
Thank you. This is the Charles Foley matter. Officer Foley is a police officer with the Tucson Police Department. In front of you is an administrative law judge decision. The board initiated in this case in December of 2017. A hearing was held in September of this year, 2019. I conducted the hearing on behalf of the state. Prior to the hearing, the parties stipulated to 17 facts. Presented at the hearing three allegations: that Officer Foley had committed theft, that Officer Foley was dishonest during a criminal investigation involving a Pima County Sheriff's Department detective, and that Officer Foley had failed to obey a court order. Ample evidence was heard and admitted into the record. At the conclusion of the hearing, the judge in her decision concludes that the evidence did not establish any of Post's three allegations. And the judge reiterated that the totality of the circumstances, that Officer Foley was truthful. Post recommends that the board accept the administrative law judge's findings of fact and conclusions of law and close this case with no action.
Questions, comments? Having none, may I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion. We accept the administrative law judge's decision and close this case.
Mark Daniels, second.
I have a motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, if we could go back briefly to the Salazar matter.
Yes, sir.
I believe the motion as made was to adopt the findings of fact and recommend revocation. However, you did not adopt the conclusions of law, which also should have been included in that motion, and I think it's appropriate to correct the record to indicate that.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I'll amend my motion to add the conclusion of law.
And
please get back to me.
Second that amendment.
We have the motion amended with a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to be moving on to the next case. And I think number four, Seth, you're taking this one, 18-152. Mr. Hargreaves?
Yes, thank you. Seth Hargreaves, Assistant Attorney General. This is a case involving applicant Levi Leader. In January of 2019, the board initiated proceedings to deny certification to Levi Leader, an applicant with the Phoenix Police Department. The board initiated based on 12 allegations that he had provided false and misleading information regarding his employment history on applications, questionnaires, and in background interviews during the hiring process with Glendale Police Department, Maricopa County Sheriff's Office, Department of Public Safety, and the Phoenix Police Department. And an allegation that he admitted to post staff that he had provided false and misleading information during his application processes with those multiple agencies. The board initiated with potential post-rule violations of R13-4-109A2, willfully providing false information in connection with obtaining certified status. 109A7, committing an offense involving dishonesty, specifically ARS 13-2704A1, unsworn falsification, 13-2907.01, false reporting to law enforcement, and 39-161A, presenting false instrument for filing, as well as an allegation of 109A12, conduct, pattern of conduct that tends to disrupt, diminish, or otherwise jeopardize public trust. Hearing in this matter was held before the Office of Administrative Hearings on April 19th and 22nd, 2019. The Administrative Law Judge issued her decision on May 28th. On June 4th, the state filed a motion for clarification, asking the Administrative Law Judge to clarify which of the allegations from the notice of hearing that her conclusions of law were applicable to, and further to identify which of the statutory citations were applicable to her conclusion of law number 10. There was not an immediate response to that motion. The state thereafter filed requests on August 7th, 2019 and September 20th, 2019, asking for the ALJ to rule on the previous motion, which the ALJ finally did on October 2nd. The ALJ issued an order clarifying the May 28th decision. The Administrative Law Judge found in both the May 28th decision and the October 2nd clarifying order that the preponderance of the evidence established that Mr. Leader willfully provided false information or committed an offense involving dishonesty relating to his answers about his previous employment with Bible Baptist Church, that the state had established by a preponderance of the evidence in regards to allegations 1 through 12 in the notice of hearing as to that Bible Baptist Church. The ALJ also found that the state had established grounds to deny certification under 13-4-109-A2, again, which is willfully providing false information and trying to obtain certification. Also, the state established 109-A7, specifically the false reporting and the unsworn falsification, and also established that the state established conduct, pattern of conduct that tends to disrupt, diminish, otherwise jeopardize public trust. Before you, you have both the ALJ's decision and the order clarifying. The state would ask that the board adopt the findings of fact and conclusions of law from both the May 28th decision as clarified by the October order, and based on the ALJ's findings and conclusion that demonstrate a lack of honesty, integrity, and character, the state recommends denial of certification. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions, comments? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Members of the board, my name is Steve Serbalik. I represent Mr. Leader. That was, without a doubt, I've been here a lot, one of the more misleading presentations, or because of the kind of the lack of context. You have the decision before you. I hope and pray that you all have read it carefully, because here's what actually happened. ASPOST originally initiated for the concept of three different issues with Mr. Leader's background packet.
They allege that he lied about his employment on three different parts, and basically that these three different circumstances that were repeated in multiple applications, because Mr. Leader applied to a bunch of different departments, when he repeated these statements related to his employment, they say that this is, you know, this 12 counts or whatever. But what actually happened, and what the ALJ's decision, when it comes down to you, says, no, there was a single instance. Post failed to meet their burden on two of the three. So now we have a single instance where Mr. Leader didn't provide accurate information related to Bible Baptist Church. And what he said is he said the church closed on his applications, which the church did close after he had left. And what happened is he was in a theological dispute. He was working as a pastor. Prior to being applying for law enforcement, he was basically in the ministry. So he's working as a pastor. He has theological differences with this pastor. He's already scheduled to leave the church at Bible Baptist Church at one point in time. The pastor says, hey, you know, we've been going our separate ways on a lot of these doctrinal issues. It's time for you to move on earlier. And Levi Leader should have written something different. And I never contested that, nor did he, nor could we, because he had an in-depth conversation with MCSO. It was the first agency where he went all the way through the background. They talked about his packet. He's like, hey, I should have done a better job with this. Now, the thing is I don't want you to take my word for this concept that Levi Leader should be a police officer in the state of Arizona, because the Phoenix Police Department fully believes, knowing all of this information and getting into the granular detail with hours and hours of meetings and analysis into Levi Leader, they fully believe that he should be a police officer. The background investigator that got to vet all of this information, saying, what was your thought process? What happened at each of these areas of employment? Why did you struggle with MCSO? What happened here? Says we should advance him. The reviewing sergeant, who's taken his time to review this thing, go to multiple meetings with command staff, is here in the audience, says, yep, he should be a police officer. The commander at the time, Commander Viner, is here. He testified that he reviewed this entire circumstance, believes that when you get the proper context of who this guy was, what he was thinking when you fill out the applications, he should be there. Now Commander Thrudenthal is here. He was briefed on the matter. He is prepared to ask for Mr. Leader to be allowed to be certified. He's here prepared to offer a statement to the board if they want to hear it. And I hope that the board got a copy of Chief Williams' letter, where she says, I was fully briefed on this circumstance, and I understand what our background investigators did. They got to this level of detail. We don't believe he intentionally lied. And by the way, it is undisputed, and it's in your hearing officer's report, that the underlying conduct for Mr. Leader, so basically anything that happened with his employment, he never lied, never cheated, never stole, never violated any laws at his job. He has nothing to hide in his background. He's literally a church boy. Like, that's his background on this for this entire case. But even if you think that Phoenix got it completely wrong, all of the commanders, all of the assistant chiefs, Chief Williams, if you think that Phoenix got it completely wrong, MCSO, the very agency that discovered this discrepancy, said, you know what? Not now. We're going to punt on you for now. All of you agency heads have done this. I've represented some of the officers that you've done this to say, hey, look, there's issues with your background. We're not happy with how you disclose it this time. Try again in 6 months. So MCSO didn't believe that he intentionally lied or did anything to be permanently disqualified from being a police officer. And the hearing officer reached that same conclusion for two of the three substantive allegations. Now, you heard about this, like, multiple things that were signed. And yes, he did sign background packets, and he had information on there that he could have done better. I would be willing to bet whatever you want that every one of you agency heads have allowed applicants who've had, I got two speeding tickets, and I actually had three. Have you technically violated the ASPOST rules for certification at that point? Have you committed misfeasance, malfeasance, or nonfeasance in office because you said you had two speeding tickets when you actually had three? You have. That's a violation of POST rules, but that doesn't result in a permanent denial of certification, because each and every one of your background investigators has the ability to say, why did you say you had two out of three? Let's talk about this circumstance. And when Mr. Leader talked about this with his background investigators, he's done exactly well. And even when he talked about it with POST, about the underlying conduct, let's dig in. I'll answer whatever questions you want about Bible Baptist Church, Bethel Baptist Church, or what happened at the insurance agency. I have nothing to hide. My background is not disqualifying. I feel really terrible. And this is where he actually ironically got into trouble, is he goes, wow, I could have done a better job on my future applications. Now I fixed it. Because isn't that what we want him to do? So after he goes through this MCSO process, where he talks to their background investigators and the polygrapher and says, hey, man, you didn't do this right. You really need to fully disclose this information. Now that you've told me what happened, fix this in the future. He did that. And then Post says, well, guess what? Your application is inconsistent from here to here. Now, all of this information, again, don't believe me, because that's really not a good way to do this. Believe the hearing officer that two of the three Posts just simply failed to meet their burden. And then believe the city of Phoenix, who has well-qualified background investigators, who has a command staff that through multiple iterations of assistant chiefs, chiefs, commanders, background investigators, who've said, we want this guy, and we don't want him to be permanently disqualified from being a police officer. They want him so bad that he has been working this entire time as a recruit pay clerk for the Phoenix Police Department. He's still a member of the police department because they want him to be there. So Levi Leader didn't get to complete the training with his class, because even when Post brought this to their attention, because let's talk about the genesis of this. Post does their review of their application. They bring it to Phoenix's attention. Then Assistant Chief Tovar said, I've reviewed this background. Mr. Leader has actually met our requirements. We believe that he's qualified. We want him to go through the academy, and they kept him in the academy. They didn't pull him out. They said he meets the requirements. Then we've had a hearing. Now, based off of Post's request for clarification, which I opposed ultimately, he's been in limbo for months. So this isn't, although you're going to be told that this is either a denial or an allowance of certification, even if you allow certification at this point, he has been in limbo for months. At a minimum since April, after the hearing, he's been sitting waiting. I filed motions to try to get before this board to say, decide it on the record that you have, because these pertinent facts haven't changed. The motion for clarification changed nothing. I admitted at the hearing, as did Mr. Leader, God, you know what? If we could go back and do it again, we would say different things related to Bible Baptist Church. The hearing officer determined that there was no misconduct, no underlying misconduct besides these issues with the application and how they were filled out. So Phoenix says that he's been outstanding in the meantime. Despite the fact that he's been in limbo, despite the fact that he's trying to support his family on recruit pay this entire time, he's been an outstanding candidate. And what we ask for is that you actually accept the findings of fact and conclusions of law, because I believe that that's what the rules require. He did fail to meet that standard, just the same as countless applicants have done. He had an error on his application that he later fixed. But when you do that, allow him to actually proceed and become a member of the police profession. Even if not with Phoenix, multiple other agencies want this guy as an applicant. And the effect of a denial would be to permanently disqualify him from ever putting on a badge. And that is not fair. We don't do that for people that speed. You go 5 miles an hour, you've committed malfeasance in office. We don't revoke people for that. We don't permanently take away somebody's ability to be a police officer. So here at this point, and by the way, this board has a very recent history, and I agree with it, of allowing agencies discretion for people who've used drugs, people who've had criminal behavior, people who have had issues in their past, because not all technical violations equal a death sentence for a career. So as I said, Commander Freudenthal is actually here and prepared to talk. If you guys haven't seen the letter from Chief Williams, which is an unequivocal support of Levi Leader, I hope that you take that into consideration.
Thank you.
And I hope that you allow him to actually be certified.
Thank you very much.
It's funny, Council started off by talking about a misleading representation. Then he goes on to talk about how he was objecting to the state's motion for clarification. That motion for clarification was filed in June. He didn't voice any objection to it until September, after the state filed its second request for a ruling on the motion. He sat silently for that long, and now he wants to come up and say he was against it all along. That's misleading. You have minimum standards and qualifications. Either honesty, integrity, character mean something in law enforcement, or they don't. Read the ALJ decision. Read the clarification. She states unequivocally he willfully provided false and misleading information. If that's something that's acceptable to this board in law enforcement, for someone who, he said it's a minor issue. If it's a minor issue, why is he lying about it? He acknowledged to staff during the process that, yeah, he was untruthful about it because he was afraid of how it was going to make him look. Now, you've all, majority of you, have served in law enforcement. You've been out in the streets. You've had to write a report. If you've got someone that's going to lie about something as minor as why he was terminated from employment because of how it's going to make him look, can you really have confidence they're going to file an accurate report if possibly they did something wrong and might make him look bad and have a case go before a court and get thrown out because someone with dishonesty? Either your statutes, rules, regulations, minimum qualifications mean something or they don't. The decision was clear. In this, this board initiated proceedings because of dishonesty. The allegations were regarding dishonesty regarding three past employers. The ALJ found, well, you only really proved it as to one. But also found that he was dishonest about it at least 12 different times in different settings with different agencies. Again, honesty, integrity, they mean something or they don't in law enforcement. And the fact that Phoenix still wants to hire him is somewhat irrelevant because this board sets the standards. This board enforces them. If it's just, well, if the agency wants to hire him, let's hire him, we can do away with the board. Just get like this big, oversized, comical, approve stamp. Hand them out to all the agencies. They can approve everything. Approve whatever you want. Again, your standards, your qualifications, honesty, integrity means something or they don't. Again, the state asks you to adopt ALJ's decision and based upon the conduct, deny certification. Thank you.
Thank you. Chief, did you have something to say, sir? Captain, I'm not sure what your rank was, sir.
I would object to that. We are here to talk about the ALJ's decision, not to hear additional evidence or testimony. If he wanted to speak, he could have been at the hearing placed under oath, as other members of the department were. I feel it's highly inappropriate for him to speak at this point.
I think it's important to hear what Phoenix has to say.
If I can point out one more thing, in the notice of hearing that was sent out and the notice of denial, it was clearly pointed out in those that any evidence and testimony must be presented at the hearing. The board will not take any further after that.
Mr. Chairman, and members of the board, the proceeding today is to be based on the record that was established before the ALJ. And again, it's would be inconsistent with that obligation to take additional testimony or evidence at this juncture in the case.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. We have a question here for Seth.
Seth, I have a question for you.
Sorry.
Hang on just a sec, Mr. Spalt. Let me go to the question here, and then we'll...
Just so I understand the finality of this, Seth, a denial certification is forever, right? There's no reapplying later on when this board has denied certification.
Under your current rules, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question for you, too, Seth. You said in here, and I'm looking for it again, that there was a quote of his admission to lying to make him not look bad. I cannot find that in this article. Can you point that out to me?
The ALJ did not put it in there, but that was part of the testimony and the evidence that was exhibit sent in at the hearing.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Just real quick, if you don't mind.
Yeah, for sure. I was just going to read Chief Williams' letter to the board. You said that you wanted to hear it.
I think that's what was...
That was an exhibit at the hearing, and it's from April.
Has the board gotten a copy of it? Because if you wanted to hear from the department's perspective, we could hear from it. It's in evidence, and it would be properly available before the board if you wanted to hear from it.
I have not seen a copy of it.
I have a copy of it.
Yeah. I'm sorry, just to clarify, was the letter part of the evidence that was presented at the hearing? Okay. So to the Arizona Peace Officer Standards and Training.
I think you're okay.
Yeah.
I apologize, 2643 East University Drive, Phoenix, Arizona. To whom it may concern, the Phoenix Police Department prides ourselves on the mission to protect and serve the citizens of Phoenix and to ensure that the department maintains public trust. I've been fully briefed as to the circumstances behind Phoenix Police Recruit Levi Leader's application and the concerns raised by ASPOST. After this briefing, I've made the decision to allow Recruit Leader to continue in the hiring process and to proceed on to the Phoenix Regional Police Academy. Recruit Leader is an appropriate hire and has the requisite background to be an asset to the Phoenix Police Department and to the law enforcement profession. During his time at the Academy, Recruit Leader has continued to demonstrate his skills and abilities, and he should be allowed to proceed to the final testing process, and if successful, should be permitted to become a certified peace officer in the state of Arizona. Therefore, I respectfully ask that the ASPOST Board permit Recruit Leader to move forward in the certification process without further delay. Sincerely, Jerry L. Williams, Police Chief.
Thank you. Any comments, questions before I ask for a motion?
Mr. Chair, Paul Ayler, I need to recuse myself on this matter.
Okay. Be noted. Any further discussion, questions?
So, Mr. Chairman, please, Frank Milstead, Arizona DPS. These continue to become more and more difficult over time as we get down to what these real granular levels of what is and isn't acceptable, and then the representation of that. And obviously, both of these men are very passionate about their representation of their side of the story at a level that I have not normally seen in these hearings. That being said, the critical piece of the testimony of that, yeah, I lied because I didn't want to look bad, is not here. But also, as a police leader and having led police organizations for the last 10 years, nearly 10 years, there are times, and we make exception for drug use, we make exceptions for time away from criminal offenses as a kid. We have, and I've had this discussion with Mr. Giordano about if we are going to continually make exceptions as a board for this profession, then those should be the standards of the board. You shouldn't have to ask if we're going to grant it over and over again. We should just make that the new standard. But that being said, there has to be on these what I would call a very, I don't know, close call, a very interesting case. There has to be some weight added to the leader of the organization for what they think represents their community and their people. And I think the letter from Jerry Williams, the chief, is very powerful in the sense that and the fact that the background investigators are here. I mean, to me, that speaks volumes of a difference of opinion. And I think that's the beauty of lawyers. You can always find one to argue your side. And they'll actually change if you ask them to. They'll argue the other side if it pays well. But it, I just think we have to. I listened to Seth and he's right. The foundation of what we do is honesty and integrity. And the one thing we test for in profiles is the one thing that we can't teach, which is integrity. It's the one thing you have to bring to this job. Because I can teach you to shoot, run, drive, but I can't teach you integrity. So I understand that. And then I also realize, though, that there could be a perception of how, was it an integrity issue or was it just being less than accurate in fulfilling that out? So we're all going to have to reach that conclusion. But for me, as a leader of a police organization, I feel, though, there ought to be some weight given to that. And if for that, when you're ready to make a motion, take a motion, I would make the motion that that we allow certification of Mr. Levi Lead.
Any more discussion?
Leader, sorry.
Comments?
Just real quick, and I hear you, Frank, and loud and clear, and the one statement is not here, but the administrative law judge's decision is here, and it's based on the evidence presented to them. And I think one of the reasons I asked about this, is this a finality to this that no one can come back from? And so a lot of our positions are sort of like we have rules, and it's a finality until someone comes and asks for a waiver. And so I'm wondering the process, and we're going to look at the rules, the process changes are that, you know, there's a waiver process for something like a detail like this that's equal to a waiver process that we have for drug use and criminal behavior and DUI and everything else. And so that's kind of where I'm stuck. I'm stuck with that. I have an administrative law judge's decision, and she based it on, or he based it on all the facts and circumstances presented at the hearing and came to that conclusion. And I don't know that I can ignore that conclusion, but I can certainly see space and room in our world for some other process for waiver, which is when you would pay attention to what the chiefs and the background investigators and the command staff and the people that are supervising this gentleman now in his reserve status can come forward and say this person deserves another opportunity. So I hear you loud and clear, I understand, but I don't know if I can be there yet.
Anyone else? Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
I don't know if I'm going outside the scope, but my question is that we look at what's going on in regards to some of the prosecution association now with Brady List and issues that we have to deal with in the future. Would a finding of either acceptance or acceptance put this potential officer in jeopardy of being on that permanent Brady List for less than truthfulness? So is he already get himself somewhat of a death sentence going into employment anyhow? I don't know if it would or not.
I'm not sure. I would imagine. Mr. Sheriff Daniels.
Does this become public record?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I would think, based on the respective county attorney who has the ultimate authority on that, that I think it would, too.
Mr. Lefevre, you had a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe we as a board several meetings ago had a case come before us where there was an issue of less than truthfulness on an application where we took a position of no action resolve in future or no action agency discretion before we initiated it, because the question was asked that if the person was truthful on a future application, they would in essence make it through the process. And is, I think that maybe get to what the chief was asking about is, you know, is there a way that we can allow someone who understands and corrects their mistakes from not having a permanent disbarment from serving in this profession? And I don't know the answer to that at this stage. And I guess my question is, what are our possible choices here when we move to accept the findings and fact and conclusions of law? What are our choices that we have before us that we can do?
Assuming that you accept the findings of fact and conclusions of law as set forth by the ALJ in both the underlying decision and in the supplemental or clarification decision, you have a choice either of accepting and determining that this individual is not eligible for certification, or making a determination that despite that, they are.
But not agency discretion, sir?
No.
Okay.
Have we, as a board in the past, ever found for the finding of fact conclusion of law and let someone move ahead with certification under this kind of situation? Has that ever occurred?
Not to my knowledge.
Been over a while. That was... Any other comments, discussion? Having none, Director Milstead, I believe that was a motion that you put out?
Yeah, my motion would be that we would accept the ALJ's findings and conclusions of law, but with the support of the Phoenix Police Department and their wishes to allow the applicant to be certified.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Joe Procuri, Department of Corrections. I second the Colonel's motion.
I have a motion and a second. Is there more discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 I have three. The motion fails. May I have another motion?
I'll make a motion to accept the finding of facts, conclusion of law of mail, ALJ, and a disposition of denial.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Matt Medina, I second that.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any other discussion on that motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
Nay.
The motion carries.
Chairman, can I have a show of hands for the nays?
All right, we are going to move on to the next case. Mr. Brackdell, we're moving to 18142.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. In front of you is a proposed consent agreement involving Officer Jesse Ornelas, and he is here represented by counsel. In summary, Officer Ornelas, during the hiring application process, submitted several applications to various police departments stating that he had had zero uses of marijuana. However, many other applications over the next year with other agencies, he wrote that he had three uses of marijuana. So we have zero uses of marijuana with three agencies, and then three uses of marijuana with many other agencies. And what was happening, and it's in the consent agreement, the proposed consent agreement, is that that this officer was submitting many applications out at the same time. So in the consent agreement, Post's position is that Officer Ornelas was dishonest. And he was dishonest when he applied and said he had zero uses of marijuana. At the same time, Post, after interviewing Officer Ornelas, concluded that he did use marijuana three times. And so in the brunt of his applications, he was truthful, but not in those several. So Post, in the consent agreement, his position is that he was dishonest. Officer Ornelas' position, and you may hear from his counsel, is that he was simply inaccurate, and that he was hasty in getting out his applications. What the parties do agree to in the consent agreement are the underlying facts. Zero uses versus three, he actually used three. We also submit to the board proposed discipline, which is in the consent agreement, it's 19 months. And Officer Ornelas has been unemployed since May 31st, 2018. So the discipline would include from that day through today, which would be time served, and then from today, November 16th, 2019 forward to December 31st, 2019, prospective discipline.
Time for questions?
Any questions?
Yeah, I do. How is this different than what we just did? I mean, we want to be consistent up here. How can I support this consent agreement when we just took certification away from an applicant for the rest of his life? So I'm going to have a hard time supporting this. You need to go back and bring us a different one. I think it's more in tune with the consistency of the bench.
Mr. Chair, I would agree 100%. We just had a big discussion. This is an integrity board, like Seth said, and I don't disagree with that. But here's we just took a denial from somebody. But I'm being direct. To bring that back to us right afterwards, it's like, wow, you're putting us in a real bad light here. You know?
I believe that. This seems to be more egregious than the last one.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would say that integrity is integrity. Either you did or didn't.
I believe that Deputy Director Ben Henry would like to speak.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, thank you. When this case first came up, and this is going on what we've talked about in previous cases, again, I can tell you when I came in the spring of 2019, hearing the board and looking at what you guys were doing, I can tell you that the leader case was already passed by my time that I got here. As far as this case goes, they are different, and I would love to say that I can point out the differences. I wish it was just black and white. There are gray areas. On this specific case, We have audited this individual three times. This individual went through an open enrollment academy. Arizona Post passed the audit with three uses of marijuana. This individual went to, I believe, Superior. Superior, we passed the audit. He used marijuana three times. This individual went to El Mirage. He passed the audit with the usage of marijuana three times. This individual ended up going to another agency, and that agency looked at all of his previous applications. And that's where we came up. There was no independent investigation. Typically, when we get these cases that are brought before us, there's some type of termination report or some type of, hey, we found out this person is lying. So this particular agency went to that background or went to that compliance specialist, hey, we've got a problem here. We recognize that is a problem. Again, when we go out and we interview people, there's nothing compelling them to talk to us. When we talk to the individual and that individual ends up saying, look, I did. I felt this, put this out in haste. There was never a comment and the difference between the last case, look, I didn't want to look bad in front of anybody. That was never mentioned. Look, I shotgunned over 60 applications. This is how he did it. As I started going through different agencies. Once I got through the hiring process, again, this is an error. This is what happened in judgment. So I'm not here to try to confuse, but when we start looking through how do we get through these cases, is this something? What is the penalty when you ask? What is the penalty of death? You'll never become an officer again. I think to the last attorney's point, when you start having these applications, and we do, we have allowances where people fill out information on a personal history form, they talk to a background investigator. Additional information comes out. We don't disqualify them at that time. They go back to the polygraph examiner. As long as that polygraph hasn't been administered, we allow more information to come out. So at what point in time do you all as agencies have that ability to say, we still want this person to be hired? When is the kiss of death? For us, we have said if it's post-polygraph and more information comes out, no, you purposely concealed that information. Clearly, you have an individual here that went through this process. Oh, yes, I did use marijuana three times, and this is how I used it. He's listed how he's ingested it. So, again, not to be disingenuous, and Post does. We are working on rule changes now that require those agencies actually to go back to each of those agencies that person has applied for. So this one was caught after the fact. So when we take a look at somebody that's been certified for the last few years and we say, okay, we're going to hold you responsible for those first applications that you put in, I think that's where trying to listen to you board members and trying to get some common sense as you know, to that point. Because, like I said, the last attorney, I think, did have some points. We often see changes of answers and everything else. We don't hang that out. As long as they came clean before the polygraph, we'll allow that. Once after the fact, we don't allow it anymore. Your agencies now, we've provided that training and background investigations, and we share that information. So hopefully this stuff gets cleaner. But again, we are dealing with humans out here with a tendency to look best on their application process. So with that, when we came together with whether it was opposing counsel, with the AG's office, how do we met these out? And so that's where we came up with a consent agreement. But again, if this is the case and that's your will to go back, then obviously we will listen to you.
Thank you, sir. So Ben, just, you know, this is not an attack on staff or staff's work. It's just a desire to stay consistent. And
absolutely.
I do think there's room to look at the rules, when you look at the rules again, to take a look at this very point, the point brought by counsel and the point brought by Colonel Milstead. So it's not about that. It's just about the consistency of the board. But I also look at this, and three times the respondent says, I never used marijuana. And then suddenly he's used it three times. There's certain things in your life that you're always going to remember.
Sure.
And whether you ever used marijuana or never used marijuana, you're going to know that. So to me, that is absolutely an untruthful statement on application. And if we're going to stand on the last case of untruthfulness, then this is no different than that. And so to be consistent as a board member, I have to go down that route and say that I'm not going to support this consent agreement. But this is not an attack on counsel's willingness or desire to make these cases come to some conclusion without going through full hearings. I've got no problem with that. But personally, I think we need to look at this as a rule and a possible rule amendment of some kind. But in this case, I have a hard time believing that. Today, I never touched marijuana, but also I remember, oh, yeah, I did three times.
Sure.
It's just not possible in my mind.
Okay.
Chairman, members of the board, Eric Wilson on behalf of the respondent here. To your point, Board Member Rodbell, I do want to highlight a piece of the consent agreement that Mr. Henry, I'm used to calling you Lieutenant, sorry, brought up, which was the shotgun spray. This applicant or this officer is so desperate to be a peace officer, he's submitted over 60 law enforcement applications. Post has identified the seven that there were zero uses identified. And the respondent's statement to both Post staff in his voluntary interviews, as well as the statement that we've agreed upon in the consent agreement, was that it was just a hasty manner. He was shotgunning these, clicking the buttons as quick as he could to try to get a job and support his family and his lifestyle. There is no dispute that three uses is the accurate one. He's been through the law enforcement, three different agencies, through their pre-employment screening, passed polygraphs as to that. His last use of marijuana was 2005 when he was 18 years old. Those are the facts before you. I understand your willingness, and I do encourage you to readdress your policy as it pertains to these. It's going to come up more and more. Law enforcement profession, it's evolving, and so is your pool of applicants, the human pool. So I would encourage you to make the decision based on the consent agreement before you and address the policy at the appropriate time. I thank you very much for your concern.
Okay. Thank you. Any more questions?
I have questions. Yeah, and I'm not even sure why I'm asking, but I'm curious. So the I didn't smoke dope and I did smoke dope, where did they come in the sequence of these 60 applications, and what was the timeline? Was this at the beginning, or was this somewhere later at the end when, you know, and I guess what I'm looking at is, were things not going so well, so I changed it to I didn't smoke dope, or were things... Or I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out how it fell into the continuum.
Colonel Milstead, members of the board, based on the allegations before you that there were seven applications identified with zero and the time on those being in 2015, whereas the majority of these, the other remaining 60, you know, out of the 60 were to subsequent applications or subsequent agencies, I would have to say that the correct, accurate usage was identified after or later on. I didn't conduct the audit personally, Colonel, so I can't. It's okay. Hard for me to represent that to you.
And I guess for some, and that does matter to me, so thank you.
Okay. Any other comments, questions? So I guess I need a motion for table for now or whatever would be the appropriate term, or just a motion, I guess. But.
The motion could be to deny the consent agreement, or if you have a proposal or recommendation to modify it, either or.
Thank you, sir.
I'll make a motion to reject the consent agreement decision and order.
Second.
We have a motion.
Rod Bell, second.
Motion and second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Nay.
And the motion carries. We're going to move on to the next, Mr. Brackdell, 19086.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In front of the board is a proposed consent agreement involving an officer, Murphy. The facts in the consent agreement are brief, but I will repeat them for the board. That on December 26, 2018, respondent conducted an unauthorized body cavity search of a female prisoner without a search warrant or consent and no medical doctor present. Those are the facts which the two parties are willing to agree to for purposes of this consent agreement. The parties also agree that as far as conclusions of law, that this conduct was in violation of A8 and A12, that there was malfeasance, misfeasance, and or conduct that tends to disrupt, diminish the public trust. That being said, this officer was disciplined by her agency, and the parties submit to the board. Our proposal is that the board impose a 40-hour suspension of certification beginning from August 5th, 2019 to August 8th, 2019. And that discipline would be consistent with what how the agency disciplined. And I believe counsel is here on behalf of Officer Murphy. Are there any questions for me?
Questions, comments? Thank you.
Here to make a motion if you're ready.
I
move to accept the consent agreement for a 40-hour suspension of peace officer certification beginning on August 5th, 2019, ending on August 8th, 2019.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Chris Pittman, second.
I have a motion, second. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. All right. We are moving on to the next 19-082. Mr. Caldwell, I believe. Morning, Mr. Caldwell.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Billy Caldwell, one of your compliance specialists. This is a final action case for former City of Mesa Police Officer Joshua Gross. The board initiated proceedings against Mr. Gross on August 21st, 2019. Complaint notices were sent to him via U.S. mail. The one sent via certified mail was returned as, quote, refused, unquote. And to date, neither Gross nor anyone representing him have contacted Post to request a hearing. In summary, Gross was appointed by the Mesa Police Department on April 3rd, 2019. On April 14th, 2019, Gross's wife reported he assaulted his 5-year-old stepdaughter. Gross was later arrested by the Mesa Police Department and charged with sexual conduct with a minor, a Class 2 felony. The criminal trial is still pending. Gross is actually still in custody with the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office, and on September 27, 2019, jail staff members provided him with a copy of the AZ Post complaint notice. According to MCSO staff, Gross stated he had no plans to request a hearing or contest the allegations against him. Post staff has researched similar fact-based circumstances and recommends denial of certification. I'd be glad to answer any questions that y'all might have.
Comments, questions? Having none, may I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, Daniel Fever, I move that we accept the findings of fact and conclusions of law and impose the sanction of denial of certification.
Al Rodwell, second.
Motion, second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. And are we discussing the 18147?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, this is the one we discussed earlier where there was a last-minute consent agreement. I'll just read the finding as a fact. On December 9th, 2017, at 07:12 hours, Deputy Bricker was arrested for DUI, liquor, drug, vapor, and DUI drugs after hitting a parked car while driving his marked Pinal County vehicle while he was off duty. After discussion with Mr. Bricker, he has entered into a consent agreement pending your approval to voluntarily relinquish his certification.
Any questions, comments? May I have a motion?
I think we accept the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and we accept his voluntary relinquishment of his certification. Frank Milstead.
Do I have a second?
Al Rodwell, second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, sir. We are moving on to the next, 19061. Ms. Waite, good morning.
Good morning, sir. Members of the board, Lori Waite, one of your compliance specialists. This case is on former officer Ryan Morris with the Gilbert Police Department. The Arizona Post Board voted to initiate proceedings on August 21st of this year. The certified mail was signed for on August 24th, 2019 by Jessica Morris. The complaint that was sent through the U.S. mail was not returned to Post, and neither Morris nor his attorney has requested an administrative hearing within the 30-day time frame. In review for you, on or about December 24th, 2018, Gilbert Police Department command staff discovered information that Morris had engaged in emergency driving with a prisoner while in transport. There were concerns about the speed at which he had been driving during this time, so an investigation was commenced, and it was discovered that on three separate occasions, Officer Morris violated the agency's policy reference emergency driving by exceeding the speed limit by more than 20 miles per hour during his emergency responses. If you'll remember that one of those instances occurred on December 3rd of 2018, where he was responding to a injury collision involving a pedestrian. There were four officers already on scene at the time that he was responding to this incident. It was on a Monday. It was about 11:30 in the morning, so school was in session, and he drove through two school zones, one at 77 miles an hour. He bumped that up to 81, and one of the other school zones was at 75 miles per hour in a posted 45 mile per hour zone. His top speed during that emergency response was 92 miles per hour. As I said, there were four officers already on scene. When he was questioned by investigators, he said he felt like he drove with due regard because he didn't crash into anyone and no one complained. He did acknowledge that he had violated department policy. Research by Arizona Post staff has determined there was no data actually available for a similar fact-based incident. So we recommend a suspension all the way up to revocation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
No questions or comments. May I have a motion?
Well, I do have a question.
Okay.
So you have to help me out. Do you have any history of officers exceeding the speed limit being fired by their employer?
We do not. Not in this particular instance because no one was injured. We did have one case where I believe someone was injured or killed. So that was a different set of circumstances, and that officer was revoked.
Okay.
So searched the database for the last 10 years and couldn't find anything similar.
I'm gonna have a struggle with revocation, I guess. So I'm looking for something that's appropriate. And I don't know if we're talking about the lapse either, quite frankly, so I don't know.
I can help you.
Can you help me, please?
I can if you'll ask for a motion.
May I have a motion?
This is Frank Milstead. I propose that we accept the findings of fact, conclusion of law, and impose a sanction of a one-year suspension dating from the first incident on October 21st, 2018, to conclude on October 21st of 2019.
Alan Rodbold, second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Ms. White. We are moving on to new cases, and we're going to switch the first two, and I believe we have a video that's going to be presented. This will be Mr. Caldwell, case number 19127.
Good morning again, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Billy Caldwell, one of your compliance specialists. So this first of my cases today is on Officer Joshua Carroll, formerly with the City of Mesa Police Department. On June 13, 2019, Officer Carroll responded to the report of a possibly impaired man in a car parked in an apartment complex parking lot. Officer Carroll located the subject, who stated he was waiting for a friend to return. The driver denied being under the influence of anything, but did say he was handicapped. As the call progressed, the driver seemed to get more upset and also refused to identify himself. Eventually, Officer Carroll opened the car door and grabbed the driver's arm. The driver then started the car and put the vehicle in reverse. A struggle ensued, and Officer Carroll deployed his taser. The driver ended up essentially face down on the ground right next to the driver's side of the vehicle, with Officer Carroll sort of on top of him. Officer Carroll delivered strikes to the driver's upper body while giving verbal commands to stop resisting. Officer Carroll also struck the driver in the head with his taser, causing an injury that required hospital treatment. Officer Carroll placed the subject under arrest and later stated the driver's behavior and refusal to ID himself were suspicious. Also, that he was, quote, terrified, unquote, during the struggle and thought he was in extreme danger. A Glendale PD review board determined the strikes delivered to the driver's head with the taser were outside of departmental policy. Officer Carroll resigned from the agency near the conclusion of the internal investigation, and the county attorney's office declined to prosecute the driver of the car. We do have body cam footage of the interaction between Officer Carroll and the subject. For brevity purposes, we've kind of condensed it down to the 2 minutes right before the use of force started, right up to the time that Officer Carroll was able to place the subject in custody.
Can we down one more row of lights just for clarity there?
Maybe one more.
I'm not saying any of that, sir.
I want you to go in there.
I don't like to go in my pants. Why are you doing this to me?
David, what's your last name?
What?
What am I doing here?
I'm making it so I can't go to the bathroom right now. I want to go to the bathroom, please. Please, may I just go to the bathroom?
David, what's your last name?
Could you please let me go to the bathroom?
How am I preventing you from going to the bathroom? Where were you going to
go? Where
were you going to go? Where were you going
to
go?
I want to go to my friend's house. If he's home, I'm going to the bathroom there. I'll go to the gas station. Please, will you please let me go?
David, what's your last name?
Hey,
what kind of car does your friend drive? What kind of car does your friend drive?
Why did you do this to me? Why?
Hey.
Where's my phone at?
David, do me a favor. Do me a favor, David. Stop reaching around, okay? Because I don't know what kind of stuff you got in the car.
I don't have anything in my car. I'm looking for my phone. I want to call my friend.
There's no need to call your friend right now. I just need to know who you are.
Why are you just not telling me things? You're not telling me something.
Stay in the car. Turn around and stay in the car.
I gotta go to the bathroom really bad.
Stay in the car.
Please let me go see my friend. I gotta go to
stay
the bathroom
the
really bad.
Put your hands on the steering wheel.
You can't hear me. Why?
Step it up.
Why? Huh? Why? Would you...
Stop!
Don't touch me!
Stop right now! Stop!
Don't hurt me!
Understanding that the strikes to the upper body were a combination of strikes and drive stuns with the taser, and the strikes to the head, I think there are at least one, possibly as many as three, were actually just strikes used with the taser to hit the back of his head. Arizona Post staff has researched similar fact-based circumstances and cases and recommends to the board that you initiate proceedings. I'd be glad to answer any questions you all might have about this incident.
Any questions? Do we have a motion?
Now, Rodwell makes a motion to initiate proceedings.
Paul Ehler, second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Motion carries. Mr. Caldwell, we're moving on to 19129.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this case involves Sergeant Aaron Aldridge, also with the Glendale Police Department. On December 5th, 2018, Glendale Police Department Sergeant Aldridge was with a group of officers at Arrowhead Town Center Mall. They placed a bait bike on mall property and watched the suspect get on it and ride away. Sergeant Aldridge drove up to the subject in a Glendale PD vehicle. He got out of the vehicle, drew his taser, and gave verbal commands. The suspect got off the bike, raised his hands, possibly in a surrender position, and as Sergeant Aldridge opposed, the suspect took maybe a step or two backwards. Sergeant Aldridge deployed his taser, and the suspect fell to the ground and was taken into custody without further incident. Sergeant Aldridge later told a Glendale supervisor that he used his taser because the suspect did not immediately follow verbal commands and because he wanted to prevent the suspect from running away. Glendale PD's review of the incident determined that his use of the taser was inappropriate under the circumstances. His chain of command documented the matter, and he was sent to mandatory retraining for use of the taser. And we also have the body cam footage of this incident as well. It's probably about 2 or 3 minutes. Arizona Post staff has researched similar fact-based circumstances and cases and recommends to the board that you take no action with agency discretion. I'd be glad to answer any questions that y'all might have about this incident.
Comments or questions? Having none, may I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, Chris Bibb, I'll move that in case 19129, there's no action with agency discretion.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Matt Medina, I'll second that.
A motion and a second. Discussion?
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
Nay. Nay.
Those with the nays, please raise your hands. What do we have there? I didn't see.
Oh, sorry.
1, 2, 3, 4. And the motion carries. We will move on to the next. Mr. Caldwell, 19135.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this case involves Barbara Weaver. Ms. Weaver applied for a position with the Gila River Police Department in 2019. During her polygraph examination, she admitted she had sex on duty 3 to 5 times while she was employed as a deputy with the Pinal County Sheriff's Office. Our records indicate that she was employed there between the years 2000 and 2009. Later, Ms. Weaver told a background investigator she had actually had sex on duty on 1 or 2 occasions. The background investigator later learned that Ms. Weaver possibly provided false or misleading information regarding the details of the sex acts that occurred while she was on duty. At this point, Gila River declined to proceed with hiring Ms. Weaver and rescinded her appointment notice. So there's basically been no further investigation on their part to sort of get into the details of what actually happened with these incidents that occurred on duty with Pinal County. Post staff believes that in the future, any agency who would want to appoint Ms. Weaver should resolve the issues that emerged in the Gila River training or hiring process, specifically how many times she had sex on duty and the circumstances behind these incidents. We researched similar fact-based circumstances and cases and recommend to the board that you resolve this case in the future. I'd be glad to answer any questions you all might have about this case.
I have a question.
Yes, sir. Chairman.
So help me with the past. Because obviously this is a violation of, no matter how many times it was, it's a violation of
the code of conduct for any law enforcement officer. And are you recommending, so why wouldn't we just initiate proceedings and get this over with? And or are you assuming that she's not going to reapply somewhere and that there's no sense putting AZ Post time and effort into doing that? I'm just curious.
Ms. Weaver denies that she was dishonest during the hiring process. We obviously have a discrepancy between the amount of times that these incidents happen. Our initial thoughts were to engage in a consent agreement with her because in the past the board has decided generally it's 6 months per act on duty. However, when we couldn't reach a consensus on when the actual or how many actual times it occurred and under what circumstances, we couldn't continue with the consent agreement. And because Gila River decided they weren't going to proceed with appointing her, basically the investigation stopped. So she obviously has admitted to acts that have caused discipline in the past, but we don't know the circumstances or how many times they occurred.
So this gets back to me where how many times did you smoke grass? How many times did you have sex? Or why did you say you weren't fired and you left? The dishonesty piece is what's there. So
if I may, Director Milstein, maybe I can shed some light on this. So I actually reached out to Ms. Weaver and spoke to her, and it's my understanding that she overestimated the amount of times these acts occurred during the polygraph because she wanted to pass the polygraph. And she said, well, I said 3 to 5 because, you know, I wanted to be able to pass the poly, but I'm fairly sure that it was only 1 to 2. And because it happened so long ago, she says that she's a little dim on the specific details, other than they occurred while she was on her lunch break.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Is there any other comments or questions?
May I have a motion?
Paul Ayler, I'll make a motion that we resolve in the future.
Chris Pittman, I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
And the motion carries. We are moving on to the next case, 19-115. Ms. Waite, good morning.
Good morning again, sir. Members of the board, Lori Waite, one of your compliance specialists. I'll be presenting for Mike Dalton today. He's off today. This is on Officer Michael Maya. He's currently serving with the Phoenix Police Department. Between September 2017 and April of 2018, Maya's wife, who was a former Department of Economic Security officer, was alleged to have committed multiple felonies associated with theft and forgery of money and weapons from her employer. At the conclusion of the criminal investigation, which was conducted by the Arizona Department of Public Safety, both Michael and his wife were arrested and booked. The criminal investigation alleged that Michael had knowledge of the felonies committed by his wife and had participated in those crimes. There were two incidents forming the basis for those charges. The first incident involved payroll checks that were mailed to Michael for distribution to officers who had worked in an off-duty capacity. Michael was the coordinator for this particular off-duty company. When the checks arrived at the Maya residence, Autumn Maya stole the checks and forged 4 of them in order to cash the checks and keep the funds. Once it was discovered that the checks were cashed, but the officers had not actually received their money, the owner of the off-duty company contacted Michael. Michael discovered his wife had in fact cashed the checks. He then obtained cashier's checks and provided the proper amount of money to the officers who were affected. Those officers have declined to aid in prosecution. The second incident involved Michael paying a pawn shop to have his wife's DES-owned firearms returned to her. Autumn Maya had previously pawned her DES firearms in order to obtain money. Michael told investigators he did not believe he was committing any crimes. He said he looked at these incidents as civil matters and had remedied both situations. On January 19, 2019, the Maricopa County Attorney's Office subsequently declined prosecution on Michael, stating his actions did not rise to a criminal level. However, in June of 2019, the Phoenix Police Department sustained agency policy violations, finding that Michael failed to report or take action relative to his wife's felonious conduct. Michael received an 80-hour suspension without pay, and as I stated before, is currently employed with the agency. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to recuse myself.
That's noted. Any other comments?
Mr. Chairman, I need to recuse myself also.
Okay.
Comments, questions? Having none, may I have a motion?
Mark Dallas, I'll make a motion to initiate proceedings.
Tom Kelly, second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We're moving on to the next, 19-119. Ms. Faust, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members of the board, my name is Mandy Faust. I'm one of your complaint specialists. I'm presenting to you 2019-119, the case of Francis Bradley Jr. with the Fort McDowell Yavapai Nation Police Department. On August 15, 2019, a termination report was received from the Fort McDowell Tribal Police Department with an effective date of August 14th. Sergeant Francis Bradley was reported to have potentially had conduct that may violate post rules. On August 8, 2019, Mrs. E.B., who was the wife of Sergeant Francis Bradley, was at the residence when a verbal altercation ensued over marital issues. Mrs. E.P. alleges that Sergeant Bradley pushed her to the ground, straddled her by placing his knees across her jaw throat area, which restricted her ability to breathe. Mrs. E.B. stated she was then instructed to roll over onto her stomach by Sergeant Bradley, who placed his hands on her shoulders to hold her down on the ground. Mrs. E.B. stated she tried to protect her neck as she feared for her life, and she screamed for their 10-year-old daughter to help. Sergeant Bradley then released her and left the residence. Mrs. E.B. then called the police. The 10-year-old daughter of Mrs. E.B. and Sergeant Bradley was interviewed on scene. She stated she was asleep when she did hear her mother scream for help. The daughter stated she froze and was too scared to leave the bedroom. She then observed her father, Sergeant Bradley, leave the bedroom and the residence. Mrs. E.B. was examined by a forensic nurse examiner that evening. The forensic nurse examiner notated injuries which consisted of contusions or petechiae to her rear neck, back of her right leg, under the lower lip, middle of the forehead, right side of the neck, left inner bicep, and under the chin. She was then transported to Mercy Gilbert Hospital for further evaluation due to being nauseous. Sergeant Bradley was interviewed by the criminal investigators who responded. He stated he was attempting to leave the bedroom after the verbal argument when Mrs. E.B. blocked his path. Therefore, he pushed her to get around her, which caused her to fall into the dresser and then onto the floor. He then alleged that because she was kicking and flailing her arms at him, he turned her over onto her stomach and pressed down on her shoulder blades to restrain her while he grabbed the keys from the top of the dresser. He then acknowledged that he did leave the residence but returned later. Criminal investigators noted no injuries on him. Sergeant Bradley was arrested and processed into the Maricopa County Jail for one count of domestic violence aggravated assault for impeding breathing, which is a Class 4 felony. He was also arrested for one count of assault with a reckless intent to injure, which is a Class 1 misdemeanor. He was interviewed by internal investigators and remained consistent with his story, with the exception of he added that he tripped, and when he tripped, he fell on top of Mrs. E.B. as he was trying to get out of the bedroom. He denied that he ever placed his knee on her face or throat or restricted her ability to breathe. He then resigned his employment with the police department the same day, August 14th. On November 18th, Arizona Post contacted the Maricopa County Attorney's Office, and they were still reviewing the charges for prosecution. It should be noted there was a previous allegation on June 6th of this year that Mrs. E.B. alleged she was physically assaulted by Sergeant Bradley. This was reported to the Chief of Police for the Fort McDowell Tribal Police Department. She provided photographs of the alleged injuries, set an appointment for a more in-depth interview, and then when contacted, she declined to cooperate further. She never filed a criminal report. The internal investigator still interviewed Sergeant Bradley. He denied the allegations of assaulting her. He was given a polygraph examination, referenced those assault allegations, and he showed no deception in his denial of causing the injuries. Arizona Post staff has researched similar fact-based circumstances and cases and recommends to the board that you initiate proceedings. Any questions?
Yes, sir.
So I have a question. So, and Mark, this may be to you. If he's a conviction, is this an automatic provocation?
It would not be, sir. I'm sorry, Chief. It would not be in this case because the conviction was for a misdemeanor ultimately.
Okay.
And per the statute, it would not be in this case, sir.
Okay. I was the impression, I'm sorry, I was the impression it hasn't gone to court yet.
It has not. They have not determined whether they're going to file charges.
Okay.
Mr. Taylor, do you have a question?
Yes, my understanding is one of these allegations is a Class 4 felony. That would be an automatic.
That's true, Mr. Ehler, and I was mistaken. Based upon that, if during this proceeding, if you decide to initiate if there is, in fact, a conviction for a felony, then a particular statute kicks in, and then that would be a mandatory revocation. But right now, it would be in the air at this time.
So my recommendation was, so we don't put people through work that doesn't necessarily have to happen, is it appropriate to table this pending the decision to prosecute? And I don't know how long that process
Chief Bradbell, I believe that would be a policy decision for post, if you have a comment.
My recommendation would be to rule on it today, and then we can follow the criminal case through the court and make and determine if it does if he does get convicted or pleads guilty to a felony, we would take the appropriate action at that time.
Okay. Mr. Giordano, if we resolved in the future, would that not give us the same benefit without burdening the staff?
We couldn't come back from that, though, could we?
No, I think
we can come back from that.
Okay. All right.
Okay, I'm prepared to make a motion.
Please, motion.
I make a motion that we initiate proceedings.
Who are you?
I'm sorry, Alan Rodville.
Frank Mills, 10 seconds.
Motion, second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries. Moving on to the next, 18154.
Mr. Chairman and members of the board, this is the case of Chief Robert Folker of the Globe Police Department. On November 8th of 2018, Arizona Post received notification from the Globe Police Department of Chief Robert Folker's resignation and the possibility of employee misconduct. Upon review of the criminal investigations and the internal investigations, the following was discovered. On June 11th of 2018, Chief Robert Folker was telephonically notified by the Gila County Sheriff's Office that one of his subordinates, his acting lieutenant, was under investigation for an allegation of domestic violence. Shortly after receiving that phone call, Chief Folker then notified his subordinate telephonically of the allegation prior to the criminal investigators arriving on scene, contacting him, and interviewing him. The next day, Chief Folker went to the residence of the victim alleging domestic violence against his subordinate. However, he was unable to contact her that day. That same day, Chief Folker was on duty and in uniform when the accused subordinate was served with an order of protection. Chief Folker then accompanied the accused subordinate to the courthouse to inquire how to quash the order of protection that had just been served on his subordinate in his presence. On November 8th of 2018, Chief Folker resigned his employment with the Globe Police Department. Arizona Post staff has researched similar fact-based circumstances and cases and recommends to the board that you take no action with agency discretion.
Thank you. Any questions? Having none, may I have a motion, please?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Chris Pittman, I need to recuse myself on this one.
Yes, let that be noted. May I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I make a motion that the board take no action.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Mark Allen, second.
I have a motion, second. Any discussion?
What was the motion again?
No action.
With agency discretion.
No action, agency discretion?
Correct.
I have a motion for no action, agency discretion, with a second from Sheriff Vannels. Is there any other discussion on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Motion carries, and we're moving on to the next. I believe we're tabling 18151, and we're moving on to 19141. Mrs. Fox.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. On a side note, this was erroneously reported for the Coolidge Police Department, but it's actually the Superior Police Department. I apologize for that. This is a case involving previous officer Brian Lawrence. On September 25th, 2019, a termination report was received regarding the Superior Police Department officer Brian Lawrence, who reported that the agency was aware of conduct that may violate post rules. On July 4th of 2019, Officer Brian Lawrence self-reported to a supervisor that he took Mrs. CP, an individual he was intimately involved with on a ride-along, between the dates of January 2019 and July of 2019. Officer Brian Lawrence advised a supervisor of sexual contact that occurred during the ride-along. He stated that Mrs. CP removed his penis from his uniform pants and placed her hand on his exposed penis during the ride-along and, quote, was jerking him off, end quote. Officer Brian Lawrence also provided a motor vehicle department printout to the supervisor of Mrs. CP and made the statement of, I've been holding on to this for months. At the same time, Mrs. CP then began email communication with the chief for the Superior Police Department. She sent the chief several pictures that she alleged were sent by Officer Brian Lawrence while he was on duty. Three pictures contained images of deceased subjects that Officer Brian Lawrence responded to as part of his duties as a Superior Police Officer. Superior Police identified the individuals in the pictures as victims of calls for service in which Officer Brian Lawrence responded. One was a natural death on April 4th of 2019. The second was a suicide on May 1st of 2019. Mrs. CP also provided pictures she alleged Officer Brian Lawrence sent while in his Superior Police Department uniform. Two pictures contain images of Officer Brian Lawrence in different police uniforms with his penis exposed. One of the images was taken in the Superior Police Department restroom. On April 4th and May 23rd of 2019, Officer Brian Lawrence utilized the Astegis system to conduct a criminal history query on Mrs. CP. He acknowledges that he was in a personal relationship with Mrs. CP. However, he stated the queries were for ride-alongs as required by department policy. They were unable to determine if that was true because the ride-along forms were never completed and there was no accurate records of the ride-alongs. When they asked Mrs. CP for dates of the ride-alongs, she has stated that they occurred every other week. On September 24th of 2019, criminal investigators submitted the case to the Pinal County Attorney's Office for their review of Arizona Revised Statute 41-1756, Unauthorized Access to Criminal History, a Class 6 felony. However, on November 5th of 2019, criminal charges were declined. On September 25th, 2019, Officer Brian Lawrence resigned his employment with the Superior Police Department. Arizona Post researched similar fact-based circumstances and cases and recommends that you, to the board, that you initiate proceedings. Any questions?
Questions, comments? If not, may I have a motion?
Frank Milstead, motion to initiate proceedings.
Alan Rodbell, second.
Motion, second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Moving on to the next, 19-020.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this is the case involving Justin Mitchell, who is a police officer for the Casa Grande Police Department. On September 30th of 2019, the termination report was received from Casa Grande Police Department that reported Officer Justin Mitchell was terminated and they were aware of conduct that may violate post rules. During the months of August and September of 2018, Officer Justin Mitchell was stationed abroad in Kuwait for his military service. Officer Mitchell stated he met a gentleman in the gym and arranged to purchase $150 of workout supplements as well as Stenozolol for $150. Officer Mitchell arranged for the supplements to be sent to the residence of his girlfriend who lived in Casa Grande. Once the supplements arrived, the package was opened by the girlfriend's father, who discovered it contained 23 individual packets containing 15 Stenozolol pills, each totaling 1,150 pills. Stenozolol is a synthetic steroid that is classified as a Class 3 controlled substance under the FDA and very difficult to pronounce. The contents of the package were turned over to the Casa Grande Police Department, who initiated a criminal and internal investigation. Officer Mitchell advised the internal investigators that he was unaware that the package would contain an illegal substance, but he did acknowledge that Stenozolol would have been illegal. Officer Mitchell was charged by the Pinal County Attorney's Office with one count of possession of a dangerous drug, a Class 4 felony, and one count of possession of drug paraphernalia, Class 6 felony. On June 11th, 2019, he entered a guilty plea to two counts of possession of drug paraphernalia, Class 6 felonies, with the following statement. On or about September 30th of 2018, in or near Casa Grande, Pinal County, Arizona, I, Justin Lewis Mitchell, knowingly possessed a dangerous drug, to wit, stenolazole, and knowingly possessed drug paraphernalia, to wit, packaging material. He then entered a diversion program, and upon completion on October 1st of 2019, the charges were completely dismissed with prejudice as part of the plea agreement. On August 29th of 2019, his employment was terminated by the Casa Grande Police Department. Arizona Post staff has researched similar fact-based circumstances and cases and recommends to the board that you initiate proceedings.
Questions? We have a motion.
Paul Ayler, I'll make a motion to initiate proceedings.
Tom Kelly, second.
I have a motion and a second. Please document Chief Rodbell's absent for this. And any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Our motion will carry. We're going to take 5 minutes. Take a five-minute break.
Mr. Chairman, to take a look at final action case number one, the one we discussed
earlier. Oh, right. Murphy or
his attorney is not going to be able to make it. I'm asking the board that we can table that till next
week. Yes. Let it be noted that we will table. Do I need a motion for that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
May I ask for a motion to table case number 17-135, William Murray?
So moved. Mark down.
Second.
I have motion second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Yerdo. Thank you. All right. We'll take 5 minutes. Be back at quite the day so far today. All right. Our next case, we're going to be moving down toward the end. So right now, we will move to 19-088. Mr. Jacobs. here, Mr.
I thought we had David Moy. I thought we had to accept a consent.
Where is David Moy?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. We've got to accept that. We'll move back up.
I apologize.
19145.
Yeah, this is for David Moy. He was an applicant with the Coolidge Police Department. And like I said earlier, he has since entered into, or he'd like to enter into, a voluntary denial with the board's approval. But just to give you some facts, on April 10th, 2019, David Moy willfully provided false information while seeking employment with the Phoenix Police Department when he intentionally withheld a previous short sale of a private residence. Between the dates of January 31st, 2018 and October 1st, 2019, David Moy was seeking employment as a peace officer when he provided false and misleading information to background investigators and an employment application for 7 different law enforcement agencies in his attempt to obtain peace officer certification in the state of Arizona. I stated earlier, he would like to enter into a voluntary denial, which is new to me, but a voluntary denial of certification in the state of Arizona. We have it. It's been signed. We're just seeking a motion from the board in consideration.
Thank you, sir. Any questions? May I have a motion?
Mark Downs, I make a motion to accept the consent agreement of voluntary denial.
I'm Rod Bill, seconds.
Motion, second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Our motion carries. Now we'll move down to Mr. Jacobs. I believe it's 19088. Mr. Garcia?
Yes, sir. Chair, members of the board, Steve Jacobs, compliance specialist. The first case I have is regarding a former Yuma police officer by the name of Bobby Garcia. It came to the department's attention during earlier this year that Officer Garcia had allegedly developed an inappropriate relationship with a female explorer who was 17 years old at the time that the relationship began. The 17-year-old reported that she had been involved in a sexual relationship with Officer Garcia. However, no evidence has been able to come forward where to prove that a sexual relationship occurred. When interviewed, Officer Garcia denied any personal relationship or sexual relationship with this young lady. However, information extracted from the female's phone contradicted his statements about a personal relationship. He had been communicating with her. There was a communication where she had brought him beer to his private residence and gave him beer as a gift when she was 17 years old. There was a communication where he had asked her to send him a video of her twerking. And also asking her other pictures, and just communication between the two that went well beyond a professional relationship that a post-explorer advisor and a female explorer should have. The criminal investigation is still ongoing. However, it's at a stall. The Bobby Garcia's telephone had been seized under warrant. He refused to provide the PIN number for it, and to date, neither the DPS crime lab or the FBI crime lab has been able to open and access that phone. Are there any questions?
No questions. May I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I make a motion to initiate proceedings.
I'll rod go second.
A motion and a second. Is there any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Mr. Jacobs, we're moving on to 18155.
Yes, this involves a former Graham County Sheriff's Deputy, Stephen Menguara, who on November 3rd of 2017 responded to a 911 hang-up call. He and his partner got there. His partner was talking to the 8-year-old son in the front yard of the resident. The male adult at the residence was in his yard holding a beer behind the fence. They asked to go down to where there was an open gateway. He complied. They got down there. The deputy, Menguera, asked him to put his beer down. The male hesitated. He was again asked to put his beer down, and as he complying with the request, was putting his beer on a crate that was standing next to the gate. He was grabbed and tackled by Deputy Menguara. and taken into custody, forcibly cuffed. And during this proceeding, after getting the individual cuffed, he said he believed that the subject was trying to knee him, and he delivered several strikes with his fist to the individual's face. Following that, on November 16th, there was another incident between this same individual and this deputy, where the deputy alleges that the male grabbed his testicles while being taken into custody. He again delivered several blows to the individual's face, fracturing his eye socket. Are there any questions?
No questions. May I have a motion?
Paul Euler, motion to initiate proceedings.
Second, Tom Kelly.
No motion, second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We're moving on to 19090. Mr. O'Rose, morning, sir.
Good afternoon, members of the board, Mr. Chairman. Mike O'Rose with Arizona Post. Number 2019-090 is on a officer, Omar Villacorta. He's formerly with the Arizona Department of Transportation, their ECD division. On March 30th, 2019, a Department of Public Safety trooper received information from a citizen that a vehicle was being driven erratically by a female driver. The citizen followed the vehicle to a residence in Yuma and provided the trooper with the location information. The location happened to be the residence of Officer Omar Villacorta. The trooper, who was familiar with Yuma and the address, responded to that location. It was determined once he got there that the driver of the car was Officer Omar Villacorta's daughter. During the trooper's investigation and questioning of Officer Villacorta's daughter, Officer Villacorta interfered with the trooper's investigation. Officer Villacorta, he raised his voice, he refused to back away when told to by the trooper, and made statements to the trooper such as, "This is stupid, you know," and he also used the F word. As the trooper placed his hand on Officer Villacorta to move him back, Officer Villacorta knocked the trooper's hand away from him. At this time, Officer Villacorta raised a clenched fist up to about ear level. The trooper became concerned at that point that the situation was going to escalate into a physical altercation. He, at that point in time, unholstered and drew his taser and requested immediate backup. He then ordered Officer Villacorta to get down on the ground. Officer Villacorta refused those commands. At the point that the trooper was about ready to deploy the taser, Officer Villacorta's daughter then made the statement that he's a police officer. Officer Villacorta was a police officer. The trooper had no knowledge of that prior to that point in time. Officer Villacorta was arrested for aggravated assault and booked in the Yuma County Jail. The Yuma County Attorney's Office declined prosecution due to the lack of follow-up on the case. Staff recommendation, Arizona Post staff researched similar fact-based circumstances and cases and recommends to the board to initiate proceedings. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chairman, I will excuse myself. Thank you.
Noted. Any comments, questions? Having none, may I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, Joe Papier, I make a motion that the board initiate proceedings.
Tom Rod, I'm sorry.
Mark Daniels, second.
I have a motion, second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And the motion carries. We are moving on to, thank you, Mr. Owens. We're moving on to 19128. Mr. DePort.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Dave DePort with Arizona Post. On May 3rd, 2019, a vehicle potentially driven by former Goodyear police officer Allison Broughton was involved in a hit-and-run accident in Glendale, Arizona. Though the accident was captured on security cameras, the driver of the vehicle was not identified. The accident occurred approximately 38 minutes before neighbors of Broughton witnessed her driving a vehicle that closely resembled the type of vehicle involved in the hit-and-run accident. Broughton's vehicle was observed by a neighbor to have body damage, leaking fluids, and driven in an erratic manner. Law enforcement criminal investigators were not able to speak with Broughton concerning the accident, which had been reported after the fact. The case was submitted to the City of Glendale Prosecutor's Office but declined for prosecution. Additionally, Broughton resigned prior to speaking with administrative investigators from her prior employer concerning the accident. Arizona Post staff researched similar fact-based circumstances and cases and recommends to the board that you resolve this issue in the future. The following questions have been developed and are, I believe, in your packet to ask in the future should she seek employment. And I'd be happy to answer any questions if there are.
Yes, sir. Mr. Taylor?
This was investigated, the hit and run. Do we know the status of that? Or?
Yes, sir. The City of Glendale conducted a criminal investigation into the hit and run accident and submitted it to the City of Glendale Prosecutor's Office, who declined prosecution due to no likelihood of conviction.
Any other questions? May I have a motion?
Frank Olmstead, I move that we resolve this in the future.
Al Rodwell, second.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? And the motion carries. Thank you very much. And at this point, we're going to go back to case 19073, which I'm going to ask for a motion to go into executive session to review confidential information. So I would ask for a motion.
Frank Melstead, I move we go into executive session to address case 19073, Jillian Bradshaw.
And it'll be your second.
I have a motion and a second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Motion carries. We're going to go into executive session. All right. We are back in session, and I am asking for a motion on 19-073.
Frank Melstead, I make the motion that we take no action, agency discretion.
Al Rodwell, seconds.
I have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And opposed? Motion carries. And thank you very much, Mr. Jacobs. Any future agenda items, anything, Mr. Jordan? All right. Then we are...
Mr. Chair, before we adjourn, so powers and duties of the post board are to make recommendations consistent with this article to the governor, the speaker of the House of Representatives, and the president of the Senate on all matters relating to law enforcement and public safety. I think that this board feels strongly that this is something that we should address, that we figure out how to do that and make such recommendations to the governor and the legislature on how we may want to proceed with that.
Thank you very much. I think that's well worth following up on. Any other discussion on that?
We'll follow up on it.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you. With that, we're adjourned. Thank you.